The only problem is they have
to have. But they have they've, obviously they have lived with it for quite some time, and they feel comfortable with it. And I don't think there's any way that you can change that kind of situation. The question is addressing health and safety for the rest of us in the region. We all know the Columbia River is very close to us, and there are serious problems of groundwater contamination, and that's why I've said stick to the timetable. We can't push this off on future generations. It's not responsible to just say, well, maybe it'll go away. But answer the basic health and safety questions. And it starts with adjacent states like ours getting this kind of information. And there's got to be more to this decision-making process than just politics. And that's what's happened so far, is that the people of Hanford, and very sincerely and in a very direct way, have said that they want to be a site. It has been politically doable, and no one else in the country has been willing to come forward and say, "You put it in our neighborhood."
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we have the role that we presently have? I mean, as it's described now, the state of Washington would have a veto that could be overridden by Congress. We may have access to information, but outside of that, with the access of information, what other role do we have other than participating in public hearings and letting our feelings be known?
It is all
the possibility of increasing them, I guess.
It is always possible for Congress to come back, for example, and amend the site selection process. Many suggest that that's something that's really fraught with a lot of danger, because there are many in Congress who don't want the states to even have the limited input that they have now. And if you open it back up, what you might find is a situation where we're denied even the input that we've got now. Now, what I plan to do as a result of this report, I think we've got four or five key areas that have to be addressed by the Department of Energy and be addressed promptly for Hanford for the process of considering Hanford to go forward. If we don't get that, I think the next step will be the Oversight and Investigations Committee in the House, which I sit on, can take a look at this and may possibly devise a strategy for giving states additional rights. But it is not as easy as just saying, let's open the thing back up, because my concern might be that if we just opened it back up, states might walk away with fewer rights than they actually have. But I think through the oversight process and hearings, and as you know, the public's got a great interest in this, and more is coming out, you know, every day about some of the health and safety considerations in this. Let's get the information and then make the additional judgments as we go.
Thank you very much. If I can prevail upon you to shift yet another gear, Congressman Representative Hill has a question.
I'm going to start demonstrating the Peter principle here. If we've got a many more.
I know.
More
just one more.
Even quickly, you're getting more incompetence.
It's one of them immediately before us, and just very quickly, I know we're.
If I may make just a brief comment on the previous subject, in considering the impact of the Hanford siting, please consider the transportation routes to move materials on both the PCB incinerator and also the Hanford site, because we'd be very concerned with that aspect of the siting process too. But the main issue I wanted to question on, Representative, is the federal proposal to revise the repayment obligations for the federal power facilities, the EPA power facilities. We had a briefing with Mr. Ogden with the Public Power Council last week, and the impact could be devastating to the Northwest if federal proposals are carried through.
Well, this proposal is essentially advanced by the administration. If it went through, I think we'd be facing in Oregon a situation where our power bills were likely to be in the ballpark of the home mortgage payment, and it would just be devastating for our residences and for our businesses, forest products companies, food processors, aluminum industry. All of them would just be devastated by small business. The Oregon congressional delegation, in fact, the Northwest delegation to a person, is going to fight very, very hard against it. Senator Hatfield, Packwood, and Evans and Gorton have been outspoken and have powerful positions in the Senate, but it's going to take a great deal of work to hold this off. There are many members of Congress, say from Michigan or Iowa or somewhere else that have decided that the way to lower the power bills for their constituents is to make us in the Northwest pay more. We do it by changing the BPA debt repayment schedule. So we're going to fight it very hard, and I think we've got a good chance of prevailing, but that's going to take a lot of work.
Okay. We will be introducing a memorial. Mr. Ogden's preparing a draft for us. I think we'll have to leave you alone. Because
no, thank you for all you.
Very much appreciate your coming before us, Mr. Motley, for traveling to us and sharing with us your insights. Beneficial representative Burroughs.
I just want you to know, Mr. Motley, this is the way it is all winter in Oregon. This is called the NFL.
Well, you told me that before.
We are, you know about what Maine is, if you look at the globe, and I just want to know, it's a typical February Oregon day. You can come back.
Fantastic. I will.
Thank you.
Good marketing.
I do my best. Good to see you.
Is Mr. Marvin in the room? Is there a representative of Mr. Marvin in the room?
Yeah, Mr. Marvin had a 3 o'clock appointment. Didn't know he was scheduled.
Would you come forward, please? Joe? Could you come forward, please? We have a couple requests to make. And you may not be able to answer the questions, but we do have these questions. The study that we have before us and to which Congressman Wyden referred, do you know how much that study cost to perform?
No, we have a figure in the office. I can get it away this afternoon.
Something like $12,000 is what I understand. Is that sound reasonable? We would like to know how much it costs. We'd like to know, was there a public bidding process undertaken? How was the decision made? And then that is within a specific consulting firm. Beyond that, how was the decision made within the executive branch to assign to the Public Utility Commissioner the task of identifying a consultant to make this study? So those, I think, are the questions. Are there other questions that people have relating to Congressman Wyden's testimony and the origins of this study? Thank you very much, Mr. Stanford, for coming forward.
Would you like these in writing to you, or you want to hear Mr. Nemeth come
in? Just as fast as possible, okay. If you could get that information to our committee administrator, we may have to determine subsequent steps.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Representative Vickers.
I may have another question that it relates to. Everything I've seen has a particular measured service scheme. I'm wondering if, I guess I'd like to know what other measured service schemes besides that one that was initially approved and hearings were held on, what other schemes were looked at and what effects they have and why one particular scheme was chosen over another.
You want the hearings record, Representative Ekus?
Well, I don't know if it would be in the hearings record or where it might be, but I would assume that there were different options looked at and reasons why one option was chosen over another. And I guess I'd like to have some idea of what other ways there are to develop a measured service scheme besides the one that was approved and why those ways, why I decided that this particular one was better than those others.
Okay, thank you very much. Further business to come before the committee today? Nothing, we stand adjourned until Friday when we have a hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2202.
statute up to speed, so to speak, to contain those those uses of gas now that were not traditionally thought of or part of their function. The suggested insertion of the words gas in line 25 and line 27 of House Bill 2202 is simply to make those descriptions consistent with what I've just suggested. We have proposed the change also that appears at the bottom of page one of this revised engrossed House bill, which we think targets the intention to confine the exclusion to only residential customers. And so my understanding is that was one of the changes that was endorsed and being submitted also as an amendment by the commissioner.
I have questions for either one if it's the answer. Is there anything in this bill that would cause the regulation of what I call propane tanks?
No.
They've introduced distribution in here, and that's a, I don't know whether we need to define that, but certainly a gas company distribute these tanks and haul through them. And I'm not so sure that needs to be regulated.
No, it's certainly not our intent, nor have we ever, to my knowledge, regulated propane distributors. Distribution effectively means a distribution system that's in the ground, a fixed large investment system such as a natural gas distributor would have. We don't regulate propane companies, nor do we regulate fuel oil distributors, for that matter.
Questions? Thank you.
My apologies if there are any confusions.
Robert Johnson, Northwest Natural Gas.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Johnson. I'm representing Northwest Natural Gas this afternoon. Northwest Natural Gas supports the commissioner's goals with respect to this legislation. However, we don't feel that all the amendments proposed by the PUC are necessary in this instance. The objection we have to the proposed bill deal with 757-005 and the elimination of the 20 customer rule, or the limitation of the 20 customer rule only to residential customers. We feel that the imposition of economic regulation by the PUC on small power producers, cogenerators, or other small producers of synthetic or natural gas would be inappropriate in this instance, primarily because of the risk associated with new developments and technologies that we see coming, and to impose standard economic regulations and treat them as a utility would be totally inappropriate. The amendments proposed by the PUC with respect to 758 provide, I think, sufficient protection to existing utility customers to avoid a situation where large industrial customers go off system and those residential customers would be required or forced to pick up the costs associated with providing service to such customers. So we would support the adoption of the PUC amendments this morning or this afternoon, but oppose any modifications of 757 with respect to the 20 customer rule. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? We have so many versions of this. I hope I'm clear on this. Have you examined the one we have called revised and there's hampering engrossed PUC Cascade Natural Gas Amendment?
Yes, I do.
Is that the document you're referring to?
That's the document I'm referring to. What we would recommend is that on the first page of that document, that the new subsection E and the modifications to subsection D be deleted.
Mr. Chairman.
5 acres.
So essentially, what you're saying is you don't think it ought to be limited based on limitation to solely residential customers?
That's correct, Representative Ekus. What we envision is a situation that if you impose full economic regulation on a small power producer, cogenerator, or a developer of a landfill operation, that that type of regulation isn't suited for the risk associated with those types of development. Existing economic regulation by the PUC is designed to cover utility operations that are basically historic. The risk factors associated with that are substantially different than risk factors associated with newer exotic development. So we feel it's not necessary, and that the general economy or economic principles would control the development for the small power producer or cogenerator.
Well, if I'm following you and what you're suggesting your proposed amendments would be, if we were to adopt those, we really don't need the bill at all, do we?
Yes, there would, Representative Trahearne. What we're proposing is that the amendments passed out this afternoon, or the second page of the document we referred to by Chairman, should be incorporated into the bill and should be adopted. Those deal with 758 as distinct from 757.
You're suggesting then, in effect, that the 758 amendments are really all that's necessary?
Yes. We feel that would be sufficient to ensure maximum protection for existing utility customers.
Mr. Chairman? I guess I'm a little curious. I mean, here we have a major utility that could lose customers if somebody else developed a source and served a commercial or industrial customer, maybe even a large one, that might otherwise be purchasing from yourself.
Representative Ekus, under the amendments to 758, if they're adopted, that developer would have to work with Northwest Natural Gas Company in order to provide service to the industrial customer within our service territory, because we do have an allocated service territory under 758. And we feel that that would be sufficient control to ensure that our residential customers or other existing utility customers would receive protection from the loss or the costs associated with providing service to that industrial customer.
What happens then?
The way 750.
If they just serve residential, if you have these amendments then and they're just serving residential, they still have to. They're still subject to the second page of the amendments. Is that correct?
Representative Ekus, under the amendments to 758, if they're just serving residential, they wouldn't be subject to 758 under those proposed amendments, if it's just basic residential customers. The language proposed by the PUC is identical in both 757 and 758 with respect to the limitation.
Robert, you feel in by adopting 758 or whatever it is, 758 in the second page, that would correct your current problem with bypass?
Yes, we think that would be sufficient. That would be all that would be necessary.
Representative Trahearne. Well, I just want to be sure we're getting up. Number of mixed signals to different folks here. The 758 amendments, as I read them, the only thing that they really do is put you under the provision of 758, which you're not under now. Is that correct?
No, Representative Trahearne. Right now, all utilities in this state.
I'll correct that. Put the small producer under.
That's correct.
Small gas producer. Everybody
gas producer or electric producer.
Electric and so forth. Yes. So forth, they're already under 750.
Not a small electric producer wouldn't. Lead, I think the way the language is right now, it deals with heat, light, and power. The way 758 reads today
is heat, light, and power.
Heat, light, and power.
And all this is suggesting it would be heat, light, gas, and power.
It's suggesting if they're serving only or 20 or fewer residential customers, just right now it covers anybody that's providing heat, light, and power to 20 or fewer customers, regardless of the customer mix. The amendment would say you are exempt from 758 if you're providing heat and light and power to 20 or fewer residential customers. That's the amendment. If you're providing heat and light and power to an industrial customer or commercial customer, you would be subject to 758 under the amendments.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Governor Trains. Perhaps staff can help us on what that really does say.
Representative Trainer, Chairman Anderson, Representative Trainer, I guess I'm struggling with who else falls into this category in addition to the well-established publicly owned, well-established utilities that are here today. As I read this legislation, any small power producer, whether they operate a wind generator, if they operate a renewable resource generation project, and serve only one industrial customer, they would, under this regulation, become subject to PUC regulation. If they generated power and served 19 residential customers, they would not be subject to these regulations. I guess my question might be, is there concern about the ability to see alternative energy generation projects succeed or continue or even begin under this proposed legislation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ekus.
I think I see it similarly. As I looked at it, what our last witness was saying was that the amendments on page 2 deal with the territorial problem and infringement on territory, and the amendments we have provide that if you have a commercial or industrial customer, then you are subject to those existing territorial and allocation provisions in existing law. If you have a commercial or industrial, and our last witness was saying that that's fine, that's accurate, that's what's needed, but it's not necessary to regulate someone who may have one commercial or industrial and make them a public utility regulated by the PUC just by the virtue of they've got a commercial or industrial, but that it is necessary and that to make them subject to the territorial provisions. I guess what then question then arises is that whole territorial process, and are we going to end up discouraging someone from serving a commercial or industrial customer, or is that something that when we have one or two at minor commercial industrial levels, if that's something that's easily worked out in this process? If I was, in fact, a wind generator, a small-scale energy generator, and I generated enough to serve a particular commercial, have I got a chance of being allowed to serve that commercial customer under 758?
Okay. We have another witness, as I understand.
Maybe they haven't clarified.
Okay.
Yeah, Bob Tarantola. He's from Pacific Power and Light, and he has a friend. I say that enviously, us on Revit. I'm not sure if we have any friends left. But, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. I'm Bob Tarantola with Pacific Power and Light Company. And I have with me Tom Nelson, who is our attorney from Stoll Reeves, Foley, somebody else, Fraser and Weiss. And I've prepared a statement which essentially reiterates what Mr. Warren said at the beginning of the hearing. And I'd like to just go ahead through this, and Mr. Nelson is here to assist with questions. Pacific Power supports the concept behind House Bill 2202, that is to prevent non-regulated entities from raiding regulated utilities customers, which would be to the detriment of the remaining utility customers. Under existing law, ORS 757.005, a large-scale electric generator could step into Pacific Power's service territory and serve up to 20 industrial and commercial customers without any form of state economic regulation. If this were to happen, it would harm Pacific Power's remaining smaller customers, for the company's considerable fixed costs would have to be spread over significantly fewer kilowatt hours of sales, and as a consequence, electric rates would rise unnecessarily. And for these same reasons set forth above, Pacific Power also supports amending the Territorial Allocation Statute, ORS 758.450, in a similar manner. Thank you for this opportunity to make this statement.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Parkinson.
Mr. Tarantola, could you give us an example of a large-scale electric generator serve up to 20 industrial customers? Example either now or possibly in the future. What would you envision? What would be an example of it?
Well, I would say that an example would be if you have a plant or a mill or something that is producing, that has a heat source to turn a generator, that is using possibly steam, with the ability to turn a generator, and it would be able to provide enough electricity to serve up to 20 residences.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parkinson.
Then you'd anticipate maybe that a group would be formed. There's a source of energy, and then others would cluster around them to use the energy. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, it wouldn't. Yes, a group would be formed, but they wouldn't necessarily have to cluster right around.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Burgess.
Just anyone can't construct, say, power lines very far, can they? Don't that have to be on public property, and et cetera?
Yes, it would.
And so they would have to be kind of close, wouldn't they?
Well, yes. Practically speaking, it would have to be to make it economically feasible.
Okay, thank you. A further question, Representative Anderson.
We just heard testimony from Northwest that they felt that 758 protected them pretty well on the bypass problem because of territorial rights. Do you have disagreement with that?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Nelson, Pacific Power and Light Company. This is, in response to the question, we don't think there is adequate protection because this is really another example of the fuel switching question that is currently before the commissioner and probably may be before this commission. When we talk about territorial allocation under Chapter 758, we have two kinds of territories, or at least two kinds of territories, gas territory and electric territories. Whereas the protection may be provided by a 2-1 gas company from another gas company, it doesn't cross the boundary. In other words, if a gas company is able to, if you will, raid, using the testimony, an electric customer's or an electric utility's territory with a source of power, it will do so. What is being proposed is to have an exemption for a new gas, quote, utility, end quote, serving fewer customers that may well be in competition with existing electric utility customers to take that load away. So no, Pacific Power doesn't believe that amending 758 alone is sufficient. I think both the chapters would have to be amended. May I pick up on a point that Representative Eakes made previously, and that, or I believe Ms. Baker made, that was about the developing technologies. I think we have to recognize first that the development of renewable energy technologies is covered, and covered adequately, in my opinion, by the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, which requires electric utilities to purchase at avoided cost prices output of renewable energy technologies, among others. Cogenerators is another example. We are required to purchase at full avoided cost. I'd point out to the committee that there is no such requirement upon gas utilities. In other words, gas utilities are not required to purchase at avoided cost prices the output of, let's say, a methane or a landfill. So I think we're already, the electric utilities are already burdened with a layer of regulation that isn't applicable to gas utilities. And I think that has to be kept in mind in this era of competition between the two energy sources.
Representative Eakes. Representative Traynor. Sorry.
Mr. Nelson, we've seen so many different revisions to this, we're not sure just where we're at. Looking at the so-called engrossed PUC and Cascade Natural Gas Amendments, which I guess is what we're working from, which include distribution of synthetic natural gas in both 757 and 758. Is there a need to include the gas companies in one or both of those from your perspective as far as the control?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Traherne, from my perspective, that's not a critical area because I understand that gas companies are already intended to be covered under both chapters. I think this makes it more explicit. And because it makes it more explicit and removes any doubt about what is a public utility or what is a public utility type service, including gas and synthetic gas, I think it's appropriate. But I think it is more a clarification as opposed to an extension of regulation. So because it makes it clear, I would support it, but I don't think it's a critical part of the bill.
Tell you what we ought to do. I'd like one representative from Northwest Natural Gas, one from PP&L, one from the Public Utility Commissioner, and one from Cascade National Gas to come forward to the table, please.
What about PG&E?
Did they testify? Does PGE care about this? PGE cares about it. Come forward. Everybody who cares about this bill, just come forward. Gather one from each company, please. So there's room. Representative Traherne.
Everyone cares about it. Do we have to huddle down there, too?
No, we can stay right up here. Thank you, Representative Traherne.
Is there a public representative out there?
Is a representative from the publics, too, Mr. Chairman.
A representative from the publics as well who cares about this. Is that correct?
They're not regulated.
So they don't care.
Excuse me, they're subject to 758.
Well, let's let them make that determination. Okay, those of you who are for... If you're interested in this bill and working out, you want to raise your hands in that narrow range that I see. If you're interested in working on this bill, all right, what are the chances of you sitting down and working out a set of amendments to which you can all agree? Anyone care to respond to that? No chances? You think? Would you identify yourself?
He's the only one trying to.
Yes.
I think
there are chances. Mr. Johnson, would you choose to convene a meeting with the interested parties?
Yes.
I would appreciate your doing that. Report to us in about a week or so. Let us know then if you think it's possible. If you don't think it's possible, this bill will remain on the table. Is that clear? Very good. Any further business to come before the committee? This committee has four members of the Revenue Committee on it. We all are involved in other sub-meetings going on around the building. We are tired, and that's part of the reason. Apologize for my haste, but hearing no further business, meeting adjourned.
I'm here.
Timing is everything.
Great.
Good, good, Larry. You can figure out this little thing. You get an A in there. They can figure it out. Don't, they're going to find it out. Don't worry about it. But try to keep this one. Couple of three on that one. I told her, I said, now you know why Stephanie's more money than Leslie.